I have to tell you, this is funny. I've told this story before, and your church was the one that this happened at. I spoke at one of your ladies' meetings, and I had this little microphone on, which always makes me nervous. And I started crying, which I usually do. And my nose started running. And I think Jackie brought me Kleenex, and I wasn't thinking. I was like right in that microphone. It was like the whole room exploded, and I was like, now I have it on. I'm like, I hope I don't have to blow my nose. I'll lean this way, though, if I do. But
Jackie, would you please take her table and put her back in the middle?
Oh, am I driving you crazy off center? She's symmetrical, a symmetrical person. I'm like that, too. Things are off center. There we go.
Have your stock bowls.
Thank you. Oh, do I have to turn it on?
No.
It's
on. That is for recording. There is no audio in here because you can't have it in the auditorium in here.
Oh.
If you can't hear, move on up. There's a few more chairs up
here. I'll try to. I'm usually pretty loud, too. I'll try to talk louder. So thank you for being here, ladies. And I just want you to know, we love your church so much, and we love coming here. We've thoroughly enjoyed ourselves, and I told my friend Pat, I said, you're gonna love it. They'll make you feel so welcome and make you feel at home. So we're so thankful, and I really appreciate that. So a couple things I just like to say right off the bat, just to let you know, I am no expert. I don't claim to be an expert, so I just like to share with you things that the Lord has laid on my heart and things that I feel like that God would give us from his word that can maybe help us. So my inspiration for this lesson, because I always ask the Lord, like, please give me something that can be a help. Because to me, and my husband kind of touched on that, to me, if I just give you facts, but you can't walk away with something practical that you can apply to help you in life, then it really doesn't do us any good. So I want to be able to give us something practical, Lord willing, that can be a help to us. And just ask the Lord to bless us. So the thought for this was actually inspired. Our associate pastor did a series called Change Your Mind. And through that, it kind of gave me the thought for this lesson that we're going to look at today. So let's just have a quick word of prayer, then we'll get started. Dear Heavenly Father, thank you so much for this day and this time we can have together, Lord. And I pray that you'll help me to speak the words that you would want me to say, Lord, and not to say anything that you wouldn't want me to. And please help us to be able to draw something practical that we can apply to our lives and just bless our marriages. And thank you so much for all you've done for us. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen. Amen. So this is called Change Your Perspective. And I love this quote. This is from Marcel Proust. It says, the real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. Do you kind of understand what that quote's saying if you think about it? The real voyage of discovery consists not in seeking new landscapes, but in having new eyes. So in other words, we don't have to always be trying to look for something else or look somewhere new or go someplace different, but we can look at what's around us with fresh eyes. And if you do that, you'll constantly be discovering something new, and it'll keep life fresh and exciting. Not that you always have to be moving, but it's our perspective, right? Our perspective makes such a big difference. You know, in marriage, a lot of times we get off on our perspective, because what usually happens, if you have an argument, I'm sure none of you ever have this problem, but if you ever have an argument, a lot of times what's our first thought? Oh, if he would just, or if he didn't, or if he could do this, that's always our first response, right? It's not, oh, I probably shouldn't have said that, or, oh, I shouldn't have acted that way. Our first thought or response or perspective is all the things that he should have done differently, the things he should have said differently, the way he should have acted differently. That's our perspective. And so we're going to look at changing our perspective. You know, we can't control, and I think you learn that more and more as you get older, you realize how much less control we have than we think we do, right? You realize there's just things in life you have no control over. And you know, we can't control other people's reactions. We can't control their responses. We can't control their decisions, but we can control our own behavior and our own responses. And that's what's so important, is for us to learn to do that. A marriage filled with love and respect is simply two people that have decided to love God with all their hearts. And that's kind of what my husband was referring to. If we get those things out of order, that's when we get into trouble. And so we need to make sure that's our ultimate goal. I can choose to live out Christ in my own behavior. No matter what my husband's doing, no matter what my children are doing, no matter what my friends are doing, I can make that decision and that choice to live Christ out in my own behavior, no matter what anybody else around me is doing. So step one to changing our perspective is acknowledge your thoughts. And again, Pat and I were kind of talking about that on the way, on the drive here. In today's society, don't you find you hear so much more people saying, I struggle with anxiety, I struggle with depression, I forget what some of the other things you're talking about, you just hear so much more of that. And I mean, as women, we're emotional creatures anyhow, right? That's how God created us, we're the emotional ones. But a lot of times, we can let our thoughts spiral out of control. So step one to a new perspective is acknowledge your thoughts. So Psalm 139:23 says, search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my thoughts. Did you ever think, what if people could see what's going on in our mind? Isn't that terrifying? Like, they would probably think, she is crazy, right? Like, you get these thoughts going on in your head. We have to acknowledge our thoughts. Be honest with God. I had a friend say that to me one time. I was going through a tough time, and she said, just be honest with God. You think he doesn't know how you feel? Like, you don't want to tell God, God, I'm angry about this. You think God doesn't know that? And yet we hold back in our prayers and in our time with God. We're afraid to acknowledge those thoughts, and we need to. We need to be honest with God and say, I'm going to tell you, God, I don't understand this. This thing happened, and I'm angry about it, Lord. I just don't get it. Don't be afraid to acknowledge those thoughts to God, because he knows our thoughts anyhow. So be honest with God about that. I'm jealous. I'm angry. I'm frustrated. I'm ready to just pound somebody, you know? Like, be honest with God. Because if you want him to help you with those thoughts, you first have to be willing to acknowledge them. Because you know what happens a lot of times? We always try to make ourselves look better, right? Like, if somebody, did you ever do that? If you're going for a job interview and they say, like, what's one of your weak points? And you're like, oh, okay. Like, if I say stealing, they're probably not going to hire me. You know, like, you try to figure out what do I say is my weak point? We don't want to make ourselves look bad. We always want to think, you know, no, I got this. I can handle this. It's really their fault. I wouldn't have lost my temper like that if they wouldn't have pushed my buttons, you know. So we always want to make ourselves look better. But acknowledge those thoughts to God. That's step one. Acknowledge our thoughts. Be honest with God. How long do we have, Jackie? What time are we supposed to be done? Step two, after you've acknowledged those thoughts, ask yourself, why am I thinking or feeling this way? So this is where I think we were talking about that. A lot of people now that say, oh, I struggle with anxiety. And I there are some genuine issues with that, I know. But a lot of times it comes down to we don't try to deal with things, right? And we let things consume us. And in we have to realize some anxiety is normal. If you're going to a medical appointment and you're nervous, that's normal to feel anxious. If you're going through something you haven't experienced before, that's normal to feel anxious. So we need to acknowledge that, and then we have to stop and ask, why am I thinking or feeling this way? Psalm 42:11 asks this question. And this is David. You know, if you read the psalm, you know that David struggled with depression, anxiety, his thought life. Those are all things David struggled with. And so it's interesting because a lot of these verses come from David's life, what he went through. Psalm 42:11 says, why art thou cast down, O my soul? And why art thou disquieted within me? So David acknowledges his thoughts first, right? And he says to God, search my heart, know my thoughts. Now he's asking the question, why? Why am I feeling this way? I need to figure this out. Because until you figure it out, you can't do anything about it, right? You'll just keep having that same thought process over and over and over. And again, all these things can apply to our relationships. So why am I feeling this way? Is there something from my past that I'm not letting go of? Is that impacting the way I feel now? I'll be honest with you. I feel like a lot of women's struggles in marriage come from things that happened in your past. Maybe it's a bad relationship you had with your earthly father. Maybe it's a difficult relationship you had with a previous boyfriend or a romantic relationship you had in your life. Maybe it's a way you were treated by people when you were in school. It's amazing to me. How many of you, I want you to think to yourself, how many of you had somebody say something negative to you when you were a young person that you still remember to this day? Almost every hand. You'll carry that with you a lot of times the rest of your life. And there's a lot of things like that that impact our marriage. They impact our relationship with our children because we go back and it's like that happens all over again. For example, if you had a father that mistreated you or wasn't kind and maybe even mistreated your mother, and then your husband says something to you in a certain way, what comes back to your head right away? Oh, that sounded just like my dad. I hated the way my dad treated my mom. I couldn't stand the way my dad talked to me when we were kids. And those past things that happened impact our life now. So we have to realize, why am I thinking this way sometimes? Sometimes it's impacted by things that happened in our past, and we can't let go of those things. Am I holding grudges from past hurts or mistakes? That's huge in marriage. I want you to be perfectly honest with me, because I'll be perfectly honest with you. How many of you would say, sometimes I do hold on to grudges? Yeah, it's a woman thing. Have you ever done this? You have a fight with your husband, and then you'll be like, do you remember 3 years ago when I asked you to do that? And it's like you have this running book that keeps track of all, you know, all the things that he did wrong. And so sometimes we carry those grudges, and we think we let go of them, and we do until something happens that we don't like, and then we dig that grudge back up, and we try to use it against him, right? So am I holding on to grudges from past hurts or past mistakes? My husband alluded to that, too. Maybe there was a point when your husband made a bad decision and it didn't go properly. And then he's getting ready to make a decision now and you're like, oh yeah? Well, remember the last time you did that? That didn't work out so well. This happened, this happened, this happened. But you know what? Your husband could have changed. Maybe your husband learned. Maybe he didn't pray about it at that point. Maybe this time he really prayed about it and sought God's help. But we hang on to those grudges and we bring up past mistakes. And that can really be hurtful in a relationship. I love this quote, and it's an unknown author, but it says, if you don't heal from what hurt you, you'll bleed on people who never cut you. Isn't that a great saying? If you don't get rid of those hurts and those things from the past and those grudges, you're going to have that affect people that never did anything to you. But you're letting those things you're holding on to impact them. It could be your children. It could be your marriage. I've even seen that in churches. People come from a church where they had a bad experience and they were hurt. And they come to a new church where people want to be kind and loving, but they carry those past hurts with them. And they end up hurting people that never did anything to them because they couldn't let go of those past hurts. And I think that's true, again, in a lot of relationships, whether it's raising your children, your marital relationships, your friendships, your relationship, again, within your church. So if you don't heal from what hurt you, you'll bleed on people who never cut you. Don't let those things impact the relationships you have currently. So why am I thinking and feeling this way? Are these past hurts preventing me from moving forward with full freedom in my relationships? You know, you hold back sometimes, right? Maybe even in marriage. You've been hurt in past relationships, and so you're like, I'm never gonna fully let myself be vulnerable. I'm never gonna fully, completely trust my husband or give myself to him because of these past hurts. Maybe in a friendship. Maybe in a friendship that went bad, and you really wanna develop more friendships, but you can't ever let yourself be vulnerable enough to really create those friendships and those bonds because of a hurt you have from your past. So we have to ask, why am I thinking this way? Then step three, super important. This is one our associate pastor brought up, and I thought this was super important. Don't just try to fight your negative thoughts. Flip them. So you can't just mentally say, okay, I'm feeling this way, I've got to stop. Right? That doesn't always work. We can tell ourselves that, but that doesn't always work. So we can't just fight our negative thoughts. We actually have to flip them. Proverbs 16:3 says, commit thy works unto the Lord, and thy thoughts shall be established. Ivy and I were just talking about that. I said, I don't know if any of you have this problem, but do you ever get in bed at night and you're super tired, and as soon as your head hits the pillow, your mind just starts spinning? You're thinking, it's not just me, that's so comforting. You're thinking about the weirdest things, right? Like, I'll tell you what I had recently. My youngest grandson, he just gets hurt all the time. And my husband and I joke, we're like, does our daughter like not watch him well enough? Or I'm just not sure what's going on there, but he's constantly getting hurt. So his brother smashed his finger in the door the other day and his nail's all black. So I'm real tired of getting bed, my head's pillow, and I'm like, oh, I wonder if his nail's gonna fall off. If it falls off, I wonder if it'll grow back. I'm like, why am I thinking this at 1 o'clock in the morning, right? But you do, you start thinking, my oldest grandson is crazy, like the busiest kid you've ever seen in your life. And he, you'd think he'd hit the bed at night and just go sound asleep, but he doesn't. He like, it's like he's active in his sleep. So my daughter is like, she's the one that's due any day. She said a couple months ago, he comes in her room, it's like 2:30 in the morning, and about 4 months previous to this, they had been out visiting this farm, and there was a cat there, and the cat's name was Cat Pacino. Is that a great name? And so my grandson thought this cat was really cool. So he comes into her room at like 2 o'clock in the morning or whatever, and he says, hey, Mom, do you think we'll ever see Cat Pacino again? She's like, really? Like, that was 4 months ago, you're asking me that? But do you ever feel like you do that? You get these weirdest thoughts, and you're tired, and you can't shut your brain off, and it's just difficult sometimes. But we have to realize, I turned my page too fast, that the Lord can establish our thoughts. The best thing to do when you're feeling that way, because what starts to happen, we start to worry, right? You start thinking about your kids, and what if this happens? What if this doesn't work out? We start to worry. So the best thing we can do is pray and ask God to establish our thoughts. I read this devotion by this lady, and I thought it was great. She said she prays for her kids from their head to their feet at night. Like, she'll say, Lord, please be with their minds. Keep their minds pure. Help them to think on the right things. Be with their ears, Lord. Help them to hear good things. Help them to be able to ignore the things that they shouldn't hear. Be with their mouth, Lord. Help them to speak truth. And she prays that, and she said, I'll do the same thing for myself when I can't sleep. She said, I'll pray through my body and ask the Lord to just establish my thoughts. I'll commit my thoughts to him. And she said, and that'll help bring me that peace. So we have to sometimes do that. And as far as establishing our thoughts, again, I'm thinking this way. So we're talking about flipping your thoughts, not just fighting your thoughts, but flipping them. So once you've acknowledged them, and then step two was ask why I'm thinking this way, now we're going to flip them. So find out why. Say, I'm thinking this way because, and then figure out the reason. So I'm laying in bed. I can't fall asleep. I'm thinking about all these things. Why? I'm thinking this way because I'm not trusting God. How do I flip that? I pray and I trust God. So I can't just fight that negative thought. I have to flip it. I'm focusing on negatives instead of positives. How do I flip it? I start looking for positives. I start focusing on positives. So take those negative thoughts, acknowledge them, and then flip them. Find out what's the answer to change these negative thoughts I'm thinking. My one niece, she's a really special girl. I just love her to death. And her husband's a really good guy, but he's one of those guys, he just doesn't do anything around the house. You know what I mean? He's just one of those guys. It drives my brother-in-law crazy because my brother-in-law can fix anything. He loves to work around the house. Well, her husband, he doesn't fix things. Half the time my niece mows the grass and people would say things to her. They'd be like, oh, doesn't that drive you crazy? He doesn't cut the grass, or he doesn't do this, or he doesn't do that. And my niece, very wisely at a young age, said this to me. She said, I could focus on that, but she said, but you know what? He's such a good dad. He spends time with the kids. He makes things fun for them. He tells me he loves me every day. You know, and she chose to take those negative thoughts and flip them. And instead of focusing on the negative things, even things other people were pointing out, instead of focusing on those and letting that consume her and saying, oh, you know, why doesn't he do this and this, she says, I'm just choosing to focus on the positives. And I thought, what a great attitude. And that's what we have to do sometimes. We have to take those negative thoughts and we just have to flip them. If we say, man, we are so tight financially right now. We just don't know what we're going to do next month. My husband might get laid off. You can let that consume you and start focusing on the negatives. Or you can flip that and say, you know what? God has always taken care of us. God has always provided for us. When I look back to the past and think of the things God's brought us through, I know he's going to take care of us again. You flipped that thought. You haven't just dealt with it and fought with it, but you've actually flipped that to a new way of thinking. So when you get those negative thoughts, don't just fight them and try to talk your way through it, but actually flip them and find a way to turn them into a positive. And then step four, act in a way that helps change my perspective. Our actions affect our attitude. And I never really thought about this way before, but this was an example I heard and I thought it was really good. Our actions affect our attitude. So here's an example. Let's say I'm lonely. I feel like no one really notices or cares about me. And we've probably all been there. Have you ever been in a room full of people and felt lonely? Even sometimes you're with your own family and you kind of feel lonely. Has anybody ever had that? Yeah. So if I'm feeling lonely, I think nobody really notices or cares about me. And I go to an activity and I've already got that thought in my mind, right? That I'm lonely. Nobody really cares about me. I don't really have any friends. I go to even a church activity and I go sit in the corner by myself and I don't reach out to anybody. I don't really say anything. What's going to happen? I'm going to end up being lonely. My actions confirmed my attitude. What I did manifested what I thought. So if I'm telling myself that and my actions go along with what I'm thinking, my actions confirm my attitude. So our actions affect our attitude. Again, in our marriage, if I get upset with my husband and I'm thinking, you know what? He does not help me around here. He doesn't do things when I want them done, blah, 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 blah. And then I want something done, and when my husband doesn't see it, I get angry. And I'm like, oh, I've been wanting those shelves up, and he didn't put those shelves up, but I didn't ask him to. My actions have now manifested my attitude. My action of not asking him, not communicating with him, have now confirmed my attitude of, he never does things when I want him to. He never. I'll tell you, this is an illustration of my own life, embarrassingly, but we had all three of our kids in 4 years, and we were very busy trying to build our church when we were younger, and we lived next door to the church, which I don't recommend. And my husband would often just bring people home, you know, and we had a dog too. This one's really embarrassing. This is TMI, but I'm only telling you because it's just ladies in here. So we come home from church one night, and he says, oh, I'm going to bring these people home after church, right? And a lot of times I wouldn't know ahead of time. And so we walk in the door, and our little dog, we had a little cockapoo, she got in the garbage, and she had gotten pads out and shredded them all over our living room. And we walk in with these people from church to a living room floor full of shredded pads. And I'm like, kind of like this, like, okay, let me get your coats. And I'm going to the kids. You know? And of course, kids are like, ew, I'm not picking that up? I'm like, shut up and pick it up, you know. But that was embarrassing. But I remember, so one time he called me. He's like, oh, I'm bringing these people over for dinner. And I didn't have anything ready. And so I'm running around, you know, thinking, what am I going to make? And the kids are making a mess while I'm trying to make dinner. And then the house is a disaster. And my husband comes home. And back then, if you guys remember, a lot of men would come home, sit in a recliner and read a newspaper, right? Which nobody does anymore. It'd be more like on their phone. And so he does that. I'm in the kitchen with like a kid on this leg and two out here just, you know, making a mess. And he walks in and sits in the recliner and opens his newspaper. You know what my head told me? I am so mad. I just want to strangle him, right? Like, how could he not see that he needs to help me? But you know what I did? I went out and I said, could you vacuum? And he's like, oh, sure, no problem. All I had to do was ask. Men don't see things like that the same way we do. They don't think about those things. They don't walk in the house and go, I should mop over there. There's a little bit. That's not usually their nature. The problem was, it wasn't him. It was me. He was happy to do it. I just had to ask. But my attitude in my head was, why does he not see that I need help? This is really making me mad. And then my action of not asking for him for help confirmed my attitude, where if I would have just said, honey, could you? Oh, sure, no problem. And so our actions often manifest what we're already thinking. So we a lot of times just have to say, I've got to make a change. My actions are going to impact my attitude, and my attitude's going to impact my actions. And so I need to be willing to make those changes, and I'll have a whole different outcome. So if you're one of those people that says, I'm feeling lonely, I don't feel like I have a lot of friendships, and I don't feel like I've connected with people at church, don't be afraid to be the one that reaches out. Don't let your thoughts and your attitudes prevent you from having those kind of relationships. And let's be honest, there's two kinds of people usually in the world. There's the people that put in the effort and the people that don't. And sometimes you come to that point where you realize, you know, if I want friendships, I'm going to need to be the one that puts in the effort. If I want a good relationship with my kids, I'm going to be the one that needs to put in the effort a lot of times. And so just be willing to do that and realize, okay, I need to be willing to step out of my comfort zone and not let these thoughts that I'm having become the same actions. I just keep doing the same thing and nothing ever changes. I don't communicate with my husband when I'm upset. I don't try to reach out to other people when I need help. I don't, you know, and you keep doing the same thing and nothing changes because our actions affect our attitude and our attitude affect our actions. So be willing to make the changes and do things we need to do to have a different outcome. Because if we just keep doing the same thing, we can't expect a different outcome. So be willing to make those changes. Romans 12, 1 and 2 talks about renewing our minds. Part of the definition of that is actually renovating our minds. When you really renovate something, you really sometimes knock down walls, you tear things out, you really rebuild a lot of times from the ground up. And sometimes that's what we have to do with our mind. We've lived with the same thought processes and attitudes for so long that we can't just do a quick sweep. We have to get in there and we have to tear those walls down. And we have to ask God to just completely scrub our mind and help us to have a new thought process and a new attitude. And we have to renovate or renew our minds. And it's not just, that's the difference is, it's not just one time. It's daily. We have to do that every day. Because a lot of times those thoughts keep coming back. They keep creeping in, right? So sometimes you'll do something and you know how it is when you do housework, right? You mop your floor. And you're like, oh, that looks great. And then your little dogs run all over it. And you have the little muddy paw prints all over you. You go, now I've got to mop it again. You know what? It's going to be an ongoing thing, right? Same thing when you, what's that old saying? Mopping and cleaning while your kids are growing is like shoveling the driveway while it's still snowing, right? Like it's just, you're always going to have to do it over and over again. It's the same thing with our minds. We can't just think I can pray and ask the Lord to help me, you know, with my thought process and change things one time. It's got to be daily. Every day, I have to get up and make that choice. Lord, today, clear my mind. Help my mind to be open to what you would want me to do. Help me see what I can change, because I can't control somebody else's behavior, but I can control my own. Help me see that, Lord, and we need to do that on a daily basis. There's a doctor, Dr. James Gills. He's a double Ironman competition winner. And his quote was, somebody asked him one time, how do you push yourself to do what you do? And he said, I've learned to talk to myself instead of listening to myself. He said, when I'm out there running, you know, Ironman, I think they swim, they bike, they run. He said, when I'm out there and I'm running and my body says, you can't do this anymore, you're done. He says, instead of listening to myself, I talk to myself and I, come on, just a little bit farther, just a little bit farther. You can do it. You're almost to the end. And he said, I've learned to talk to myself instead of listening to myself. Because what does the Bible tell us about our heart? It's deceitful above all things, right? So if we listen to our heart a lot of times, it's going to tell us the wrong things. So instead of listening to ourselves, let's talk to ourselves and say, okay, God is with me. God can give me the strength I need to do this. God can help me change my thinking. God can help me in this relationship. And make sure that we talk to ourselves, listen to ourselves. Just like in the Bible, when David, it talks about in 1 Samuel 36, it said, David encouraged himself in the Lord. David was surrounded by people that wanted to stone him. His whole nation was turning against him. And he found within himself the ability to go to the Lord for his encouragement. He encouraged himself in the Lord. And we need to learn to do that. By changing our perspective, we can choose to live a grace-based marriage. I love this. I saw a little study on this. A grace-based marriage versus a performance-based marriage. The difference is, a performance-based marriage says, when you do what I want you to do, I'll be kind and loving and I'll do for you. A grace-based marriage says, even when you're grumpy and unkind and not real lovable, I'm going to be kind to you anyhow, and I'm going to love you anyhow, and I'm going to care for you anyhow. So we're not basing our marriage and the way we treat our partner on their performance for us, but we're basing it on God's grace in our life, and we're extending that to our spouse. And the same thing with our children. So to have a grace-based marriage versus a performance-based marriage is a beautiful thing, and it's a hard thing. Because what's our human response? If you're being mean to me, what's my nature? And you know what's sad? The truth is, the people we're closest to and have the most intimate relationships are the ones sometimes that we're the most unkind to, right? Like I haven't gotten to meet you or spend much time with you, I probably wouldn't say something to you that I'd say to my husband, right? Maybe she cut me off in the donut line and she got the last donut that I wanted. But you know what? I'm not going to be like, hey, I wanted that donut, and you took it right out from... I wouldn't say that to her. Now, if my husband did it, I might like, hey, give me that jam donut. That's the one I wanted, and that was the last one. We'll say things to the people we're closest to that we would never say to anybody else. But if we have a grace-based marriage, we won't do that. Because we'll let God's grace flow through us. And God's grace says, I loved you even when you weren't lovable. I treated you with kindness even when you weren't good to me. When you weren't faithful, I was still faithful to you. That's a grace-based marriage. And if we can do that, that will change everything. It will change our perspective. It will change our marriages. It will change our churches. It will change our relationships if we can get a hold of that. Changing our perspective. Choosing every day to love, forgive, listen, and communicate. Every day. Again, it's just like that renewing of our mind. I'm going to get up every day and I'm going to make these choices. And again, if it's performance-based, it's going to change every day. But if it's grace-based, it's going to be a constant. I'm choosing to love. I'm choosing to forgive. I'm choosing to communicate. And then I loved this quote. We cannot expect God to be our source of peace if something else is our source of satisfaction. So in our marriages, this is very important. It's not our husband's job to make us happy. That might sound counterproductive. But you know what? I have to find that satisfaction and that peace and that happiness from my walk with the Lord, from my relationship with God. If I put that burden on my husband or my children or my pastor's wife or my friends, that's a burden they weren't meant to bear. That joy, that inner peace has to come from my relationship with God. We cannot expect God to be our source of peace if something else is our source of satisfaction. So if I'm trying to draw all my pleasure and my satisfaction in life from my relationship with my husband and my kids, and it's wonderful to have that, but if I'm putting the burden of all that on them, they're humans. They'll disappoint. They'll have bad days. They'll do things wrong. I love your pastor's wife to death. But you know what? She's human. She might do something one day that disappoints you. She might say something. Mrs. Stensis, been in the ministry for many, many years. Love her. She's so sweet. Rachel, all your, Heidi, all your staff people are wonderful. But you know what? They're all human. They might say something sometime that hurts your feelings, or they might not be there for you sometime when you need them in your eyes. But if your source of peace comes from God, that's okay. You'll understand that. But when we put that burden on people, whether it's our husband or our children or our church staff, we're going to get hurt and we're going to get angry and we're going to get bitter, because that's not ultimately where our peace and our satisfaction should come from. So if we can learn that and make God that for us, that will change every relationship we have, if we can do that. So that's the final thought I want to give you. The final thing I want you to leave with is, of all the other things we talked about, remember that. If you can make God your source of peace and your source of satisfaction and practice grace-based living, that will change every relationship in your life, every relationship you have. Okay? Thank you, ladies. I think I even finished early.